My name is Jeremy Chapman. I want to kick off our next session, OSP 201, the top 10 secrets revealed of Office, the new version of Office. I come from the Office product group, so I was I flew all the way from Redmond, but actually it was even worse for me because I went to Germany and Croatia last week for different conferences, and I took about 25 plus hours flight to come over to TechEd because I want to make sure we presented to you our Office products and all of the features. You guys are the first ones to see all of this content. We've done a few internal conferences, but this is really the first external IT pro conference that's ever seen the new version of Office and all the things that we have. I'm joined by Mr. Yoni Kirsch. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Yoni.
Thanks, Jeremy. My name is Yoni Kirsch. I'm an Office 365 MVP from Australia. I work for Fast Track Technology, and we're a Windows and Office deployment consulting firm. We deal with enterprise and government customers, and we work on Windows and Office deployment. And I'm really excited about this conference and about being able to talk about all this exciting new technology. Jeremy and I just presented at TechEd North America just a few weeks ago, and we had a whole conference full of Office 2010 content.
Yeah.
So we were kind of just bursting to get out.
So for me, it's a bit anticlimactic, a bit. I've been working on Office 15, this new version, for the last year and a half. When I went to TechEd North America, we were forced to talk about Office 2010 because we hadn't disclosed anything. So it was like kind of going back in time and talking about all the old stuff and really any issues that we had and how to make that as fresh as possible. With this one, though, we're going to go into actually the features that we haven't shown in the previous session. Anybody at the session this morning with Michael Atala and myself presenting all of the main features? Okay. So a lot of you that were there, you saw a bunch of features in all the products. But we want to show the things that don't typically get presented, things that are going to save you a bunch of time that may not have made it into that keynote demo that you may not have seen if you watched that live webcast with Kurt Koenigsbauer and Steve Ballmer and then later PJ Hawk presenting features of Office in those sessions. So we're going to talk about the more kind of hidden features that you may or may not have actually discovered as you've been testing out the new version of Office. So with that, in terms of agenda, we're going to do 10 highlights of the new Office that you may or may not have seen. And with all these, we're not going to do any slides, just a demo introduction of the feature. I'm going to talk to it. Yoni's going to do a bunch of demos. I'm going to do a few demos. But we want to make sure that we leave you with a taste of all of these features that don't really get talked about, but they're going to be very important for you as you start to look at and either evaluate or later implement the new version of Office. So with that, let's start out with number 10, and I'm going to have Yoni demonstrate this one. We have a new thing called Eyedropper in PowerPoint, which is quite a cool feature. I'm going to move over to Yoni's machine. He's actually on a touch device. That's one of the things that we'll talk about as well. So let's move over to your machine. There we go.
Okay. Thanks, Jeremy. So this is one of two features that I really like from PowerPoint that we're going to be talking about today. And both of the features from PowerPoint that we're going to demo are to do with making it easier to make anyone an expert in PowerPoint. Can I get a show of hands? Who kind of considers themselves PowerPoint gurus? Like, they make really good PowerPoint presentations that look sharp. Okay, I have three people there. Now, just to contrast that.
I do that a lot.
Oh, sorry. Right.
Yeah.
So, now can I get a show of hands who was a part of their job, their daily role, actually have to create PowerPoint presentations as part of their job role? All right. So that's the other half of the room there that we can safely assume have to make PowerPoint presentations but don't really consider themselves to be any good at it. So with that, I'd like to show you a cool new feature in PowerPoint 2013 called the Eyedropper. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to create a new shape here. We'll put a square there. But maybe we want to make that square look more like on brand with the rest of it, but we're not quite sure what this color is. And previously we might have to go into here, format shape, and if you were really cluey, you could probably pick up to come in here and then say the color, and then you could say more colors, and then you could write down these numbers here. Then you could go back into this one, and you could say, all right, I want to set the color of this, and hang on, what were they? Does anyone remember? No. So the great new feature here is if we just close out of the formatting pane, straight from the home tab inside, or in fact the drawing tools one, we can set the fill and we can select the eyedropper and have a look at this. Now we're just moving around in PowerPoint. We can pick whatever color it is that we want to
use it.
So a simple little thing, but in my opinion, something that will take a bit of the pain out of formatting PowerPoint.
We got one applause, but it doesn't count because he's internal. Sorry. All right. But thank you for starting. Okay, so that's one thing, nice simple feature. Something that's going to save me at least a lot of times. I've always tried to match these new I can't say Metro anymore. These new Windows 8 style tiles on my PowerPoint presentations these days. A lot of stuff that we can do there in terms of saving time. Does the eyedropper work in Word as well? No, it's not on the shape fill in Word. Actually, I don't think it is. I could look. Go ahead and look, Yoni. Go ahead and look while we talk about number 9. So I haven't used it in Word, but it might actually be there. Office telemetry and the telemetry logs and dashboards. So this is something, if you're an IT guy, like myself, I came from a software distribution background. A lot of times you got to go out and you got to see what Office files are in use. You got to see if there are any errors. You got to look at, you know, how many people have Office installed. And then when a help desk rings, somebody phones up and says, well, my PowerPoint's loading slowly. Okay, that's great. Is that something that everybody is feeling, or is that something that only one guy has an issue with? So one of the things that we can do, around five, one of the things that we can do is go into the telemetry logs in the new Office clients. Sort out my presentation. All right, so I've got a projector thing that's not quite going on right now. But what we can do is actually go into, and otherwise we can use Yoni's machine to present that from, is go into Office telemetry. And what that's going to do is enumerate all of the different add-ins, customizations I might have. It's going to also look at the Windows event log and see everything that's in there. All right, there we go. So just to show you what that looks like, I am now in my computer. Just to show, by default, we put in the Office telemetry log. It's something that we actually put in the start menu on Windows 7, or if you're in Windows 8, it's on the start screen. I've already got it running, however, and I'm already launched into my telemetry log. Now here we've got a normal Excel spreadsheet. Now if you're a Windows event log reader and you've got Procmon and all the different sys internal tools running, you'll probably snicker a bit. Yeah, I've got all my event logs inside of Excel. Okay, tmtrace and all those are good tools, but this actually lets you do some more slice and dicing on the data. So what I can do in this one, since I'm in Excel, if I want to, I can go into critical, look at all my critical issues, and see exactly what's going on with this particular machine. So I can do it at one machine level and really view into any issues that I've got on that computer. If somebody calls and I remote into their computer and start to snoop around a bit inside of what they've got going on. But if I want to take that to the next level, what I can do is actually use our telemetry dashboard, which I've already got opened. Now, just a show of what this actually does, I have basically all my computers in my environment. They are storing their logs. We're determining via group policy where they're storing their logs to in a file share. Those then get processed and get stored and processed in the SQL. Then I can get a view of my entire organization. So I can see exactly how many documents are out there, how stable they are. I've got stability of the last 400 frequently used documents, all the solutions. And I can go in at the document level or the solution level and look at what's going on in my environment. So I've got a couple of things here. I'm just going to go quickly into the solutions view. Now, some of the things that I can do here, and I've got an issue here where I've got an add-in that's taken a long time to load. So, for example, if I wanted to take that guy and I wanted to see what's going on with that, and my help desk rang, and I want to see who else is affected by this, I have 17 other users that are affected, and that's going to give me a view of all the other people that are affected by that same issue. So it gives me a very powerful view to be able to go in and see who exactly in the organization is more affected by that. And, you know, if I've got a vice president or a president affected by it, I might want to spend more time on it. But if I've only got one guy, I can triage that and say, sorry, I don't have time to work on this. Or if I've got 1,000 people, yes, we need to get a fix out to get rid of that. So to get rid of that, it's actually quite cool. New feature that we have. We can go in and actually manage the add-in. So for the first time, we can take that add-in. Here we have this AdLink add-in that's causing a delay in our PowerPoint to boot. If I go into this field here and do block and create a group policy script using PowerShell, what that's going to do is it's going to save this. I'll just do a slight change to the name because I think I've already got one there called that. And we'll just save that to my desktop. And I'm going to show you what that looks like. We'll just open this up in PowerShell. And basically what it's done is it set up a rule to block that ad link ad. And I can now deploy that through group policy so that the other 1,000 users, or in that case 17, don't experience that boot delay in terms of their PowerPoint opening up. Because we had a 9.9-second boot delay there, and we can mitigate that across the entire organization. So really cool stuff built right into Office to enable you to actually look at the telemetry and the errors that are happening, and also the documents and critical issues, all of the things that you're using to extend or customize Office's solutions, and look organization-wide at all the user systems and be able to triage what needs to be fixed if you need to, or see any issues in terms of performance, et cetera, across the organization. So this is something that not a lot of people have played with, but it's extremely powerful.
And I think to put a bit of context around that, when I'm not up on stage talking about Office with you, Jeremy, I'm out on site with customers working through large-scale Office deployments, and one of the biggest challenges that we came across over the last kind of 5 or so years with Office 2007 and Office 2010 is that there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt out there in enterprise IT departments about moving from one version of Office to the other. Some of it founded, some of it not so much. Changes in document formats, these can be fairly challenging things to deal with. And there certainly in the previous versions were tools out there, if you're familiar with the OMPM, the Office Migration Planning Manager, and the OEAT, the Office Environment Assessment Tool. Those tools existed to go out onto your PCs and analyze the Office documents and add-ins that were being used and compile that information back into a report. However, the biggest problem that we came across was that information was missing context. We could scan a million files on your SAN, and we could say, okay, 96% of them are fine. Out of the remainder, there's a few that have this issue and there's a few that have that issue. But people would then get hung up on those problems without really thinking about the fact that no one's using those documents, or that document hasn't actually been edited in 2 years. So we spent a lot of time crafting the report out of the data that we collected, trying to put some context around it. And what I think is the telemetry log and dashboard brings to the equation is a very quick and easy way to put context around the information that you're looking at. Oh, look, here's these 17 users who are working on this one document. That's something that I'm going to focus my efforts on.
Yeah, and the other thing to note here is we can also deploy agents onto down-level versions of Office. So I have Office 2003, 2007, or 2010. I can use agents that come with the new Office Wave 15 product, and you can actually do a discovery on all of your older versions of Office. The other thing you're going to find, though, speaking of compatibility, stuff just seems to work. I mean, we tried to make the client so that your files work, your add-ins work, all the customizations that you're doing around the new version of Office will just work out of box. You know, for a lot of people, it's the fear of actually getting the new Office out and deployed, whether it's 2010 or the 2013 client. So one of the favorite quotes I have from one of my field guys going out, it would be better to send out Tony Robbins to really do motivational speaking to a lot of the people who are, you know, afraid of testing Office stuff as opposed to actually sending out an app compat guy, because they'll get there and say, okay, what's broken? Well, we haven't tested yet. Okay, well, there's nothing broken then. Let's do some IE6 to IE8 app compat. Because they don't have a lot to do. Once you actually test the Office stuff, there's nothing really broken, or it's like 3 or 4 things out of 10,000 users. So let's go to the next one.
I think Chris really hit that on the head when he said that, because I think most of the really successful Office 2007 and Office 2010 deployments that we saw out in the field were the ones where they did the least amount of file compatibility work, because at the end of the day, you spend a lot of energy focusing on the small percentage of documents.
All right, so the other one, number 8, the new Office web apps. Now, we've done a lot of work here with Office web apps, and one of the things that this really comes in handy with is with a touch-based device, if you, say, only got a browser on that device that run, you know, the browser's got to run HTML5 and Java, which most do, and we're testing on Safari, and we're testing on Chrome, and we're testing on Firefox, and all those things, obviously, Internet Explorer versions 8, 9, and 10. But Yoni's going to show you a quick demonstration as to what that looks like running inside browser context, because to a lot of people it's going to be indiscernible in terms of, am I using a web app or am I using the full client? So let's go ahead and switch to your device here. I think it's on B.
Is that one?
And no. Foursquare maybe.
Here we go.
There we go. And over to your machine again.
Okay, so we've got my Samsung tablet here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into the Windows 8 IE browser. So those of you working with Windows 8 will know that there's, in fact, two IE browsers, and so you can see we're actually working with the one inside inside the Windows 8 UI. So what I'll do, I'll just open up a Word document that I have here, and you can see that this is loaded inside the web app. And if I want to edit that document, I could do that right from inside the browser. And as, if you have a look here, those of you who came along to the keynote this morning, you'll see that the user interface here is barely discernible from the full Word executable that would run on your computer. So we've got full capabilities, we can work with stuff, and we've got quite a good interface for touch as well. You can see our keyboard pops up and down as it needs to. And we can actually turn that touch mode on and off if we want to see more stuff. I can work a bit more delicately here with my mouse. If I'm running around sitting in an airport, then I can turn the touch mode back on and get my big fat finger buttons working as well. So if I just exit out of that, you'll see that we're taken back to our SharePoint site. And I'll just quickly pull up an Excel spreadsheet so you can see that as well. And once again, if I edit that in the browser, we've got a full web Excel environment that we can work with here. We can select fields, we can change formatting, whatever we want to do. You'll see there's almost all the functionality that you find in the full app that you would use on a daily basis can be also found.
So again, this is something that you don't see a lot of in terms of the keynote presentations. We've got so much to show inside the client app. But these web apps continue to get better and better and better, and they're actually on a cycle where we can improve those more rapidly than you'd think of when you're talking about the standard clients that get updated every 3 years or so. These we can keep rolling updates out too. So there's a bunch of stuff here to make these very usable, not only on a Windows 8 tablet, but other tablets that are connecting into SharePoint, again, from iOS devices to Android devices that have the right, the right internals essentially to be able to run the HTML5 and the Java behind it. And they're going to have a great experience running the web apps. And it's all touch-enabled. It's much better than the 2010 versions of the web apps on those device types. So, again, huge amount of progress there in terms of the web apps, and something, again, that we don't often see in terms of just general Office 15 or Office 2013 wave presentations.
And you see there why Jeremy was talking. I've added a chart. I've reformatted some data. You'll also notice that when I'm working with touch, I've got my feedback turned on there that you can see the behavior right inside our web browser is a fairly rich one for a touch device.
Okay, so let's go to our number 7 feature, which is Shape Merge in PowerPoint, another brand new thing that you couldn't do in older versions of PowerPoint. And for that, Yoni is going to show us a demo and really talk to why you would want to use that inside of PowerPoint. Because there's a lot of times where I've got custom shapes, maybe I want to build different logos, and we want to do things that just, even though we've got a lot of shapes that we can do, we can actually add that within PowerPoint and just do whatever we want. We can add, diamonds to arrows and everything else that we want to do within that. So I'm going to go ahead and swap over to your machine again, which is right there.
All right, so back in PowerPoint again, this is the second of the two features that I alluded to earlier. And my disclaimer again, I'm probably the worst graphic designer you'll ever meet in your life, but I'm going to have a go at it anyway. So, the feature that Jeremy was talking about is also to do with shapes. We can add a shape in here. We might say that we're going to make a logo for Jeremy's new company that he's setting up.
Why don't you give me a love heart or something in there?
A love heart?
Yeah.
Let's see what I can come up with for you. There it is.
There we go.
All right. So if we put that in there, you'll notice you can't actually see anything because they're both blue. But if I select them both and I say merge, I can combine that and very quickly put together some nice looking.
And the other thing is, if we want to add, say, a rectangle to the top of it, we can do other things to make that not just a normal rectangle, but we can add and make whatever shapes you want. And it's better than grouping as you had in the older versions of PowerPoint, because like we have here, we've got this box actually floating over the background, so we can have things like transparency built in. You could use the combine there on the arrow if you want to and have that little piece of the arrow transparent within there. But main thing is I can do one command to fill it to whatever. I could use the eyedropper now if I want to. and fill the background of that, say that same orange color if I want, and basically have it exactly matching that shape. So a lot of cool new stuff inside of PowerPoint, in addition to all the stuff that Michael showed you this morning, but this shape merge is brand new, something that we've got in the new version of Office. All right. So on our top 10 list, let's talk about number 6, which is Access is once again cool. I shouldn't be saying this. I used to be an Access database programmer. I worked in China for Bertelsmann years and years ago. That was my main job, was building Access databases, and then I kind of went into more of an infrastructure world after that. But back then, right, Access had an MDB file underneath it. You wanted to try to go and squash them out from various people's desks. It was like playing a game of whack-a-mole to try to find them all and get rid of them or upsize them to a SQL backend. Now we're actually backending Access into SQL Azure. So you actually have your data being stored remotely. You can essentially build a SharePoint site or a public site that's storing all the data that you're entering right back into SQL Azure. So with that, Dioni's going to show a demonstration of Access being backed by SQL Azure. And again, Access itself is cool again in that we don't have to make all these ugly forms and, you know, drag and drop things like we used to have to do. It's all just very Windows 8 app, Windows 8 style app looking by default. A lot of the forms are already pre-built for you. So
built right onto SharePoint, but with a lot more power than doing basic list customization inside a SharePoint library.
Yeah.
So let's just go ahead and jump into Access 2013. And I'm going to do this live off the cuff, so hopefully I don't have to re-authenticate or anything like that. What I'm going to do is, rather than selecting a desktop database, I'm going to select a web database. And you'll see straight away I'm prompted where I want to save it. You can see I've got more SharePoint tenants sitting here than I probably should. We're going to go with that one. And we'll say okay. So what's going to happen here is I'm going to be presented with my credentials. No, it's signed me right in. This is going to talk to SharePoint, create a SQL Azure database instance, create the front end in SharePoint, and then in a second or two, it's going to present us with the user interface, and we can start making changes, adding tables, adding queries, adding reports, macros, everything that you would imagine that you could do in a Access database, we can do from here. So we can create custom content by hand here, or we can just start typing and get some pre-populated tables. In this case, I imagine that Jeremy probably wants to track the contacts for his new company. So if I search for that, we can see straight away that we have a contacts list there. We're going to download that straight from the web library. And I think also we probably want to keep a track of inventory. So I'm going to search for inventory, and I can see there that there's an asset list that I can choose. I'm going to add that as well. Those of you with sharp eyes will notice that those two items have now appeared in the left-hand pane, and we can edit those from here. And you'll notice I'm doing this all with touch. I could just as easily be working like this, and we can move different fields around if we want. We might say that the company is more important. We might grab all of this. And I'm just going to add another button in here that has a star, and you can see we could add on-click code, whatever else we wanted to do there. So that all sounds fine, but let's have a look at what happens when we launch it. Rather than running inside the Access MDB runtime, this has now been uploaded straight to SharePoint, all loaded into a SQL Azure database, and you'll see that we have our database application right here. So you could straight away hand this over to your end business users, and they could go and start entering their information in, saving records, and all this is manageable. You can keep everything in one place. It's all backed up, and it's highly available, and you don't end up with thousands of Access databases running around. So,
and obviously you get all the scale then of having SQL Azure at the back end. So if your business does grow more and more over time, then basically in terms of adding more and more resource to it, adding more and more size to your SQL back end, that's something that Azure is kind of doing for you in that it's able to grow with you. And you can just basically have everything hosted, and you don't have these MDBs to again, chase around and try to kill or migrate into a larger database or larger app.
Sure.
Do you have a question in the back? I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, I'll repeat the question. The question was, can you still create a traditional MDB, or since 2010 it's now ACCDB, but you're saying, can we still create a local database file and store it on our computer? And the answer is absolutely yes. You can see we can still create an ACCDB file, put it in our My Documents, and then we've got a blank database there, just like you always could, so we haven't taken that away from you. Yeah.
Okay. So, number five, one of my favorites, Office on Demand. So, people that were here this morning saw Click to Run Office, and basically what we can do now, instead of having to download that big 700 megabyte package or install over the network on your corporate site or whatever you're doing, now I can go temporarily if I want. I can log into Yoni's machine. If Yoni's machine has no version of Office on it, all I have to do is go to my Office 365 site. I can log in, and basically that's going to give me a whole version of the Office app. Now we're going to show the same kind of the same document that we were using before. I'm going to go ahead and demonstrate what that looks like here. So I think I'm going to go 5, force acquire. Here we go. There we are. All right, so here I'm at Contoso IT. So one of the things I like to do in my spare time is hang out at Contoso Corporation and do work. And here, what I have on my machine in this case is I don't have any Office installed. Well, I wasn't supposed to have any Office installed. Let me uninstall Office. This is an impromptu. I'll go into uninstall Office. So we'll do a show of Office uninstall with Click to Run, which will basically show how fast the uninstall is. So in a bonus top 10 feature, we'll show top 11 feature. Okay, and we will shut down our browser. So one of the 11th best feature with Click to Run, aside of just the fast install of it, is the ability to uninstall it really quickly on a machine that's got Office already installed. So one of the things that we can do while it's uninstalling, because we are not going to be using that code, is go in and show Office on Demand. Hopefully that will, we're still logged in. Let's go into our account planning. Now you saw that Office is uninstalling, so it's going to be something that we wouldn't typically be able to launch an application if Office is uninstalling, right? That's not going to typically work. So we'll go in and open up the account planning. We're going to show the web app first as the first entry point into that file. So now we're both on the same web app. We're going to see that we've got the same document. Now what I can do is open and edit the application in the Word web app. And we've got what we saw before, the ability to do a bunch of stuff. Now, that ribbon layout, everything's pretty good. Let's say I want to do something more advanced. Like, let's say I want to, and we see Yoni is editing the document. Let's say I want to do something like import video or import a Bing image or something like that. I've got a lot of commands in the insert box. I got a lot of commands in the insert box, but I don't have the insert video from Bing, that type of stuff. So what I could do is go into Open in Word. And whether I have Office installed or not, whether I've got no version, Office 2003, Office 2007, what it will do is actually stream Office into the user profile, and I can use this on any number of machines that I can log into. So I can log into Yoni's machine, log into office365.com. As long as he's running Windows 7 and connected to the internet, I'll be able to install and have an Office version on any computer that I use.
What if I don't have admin rights? What if you're sitting in an internet cafe, Jeremy?
So in terms of admin rights, because we're installing to the user profile, not actually installing system-wide on the entire machine, then basically I can also run that on any computer with or without admin rights. So I don't have to worry about having admin rights on that. So it looks like, let's make sure that I'm actually running that. Integrated Office is the process that I should be running. So never a failed demo, only an impromptu debugging session on stage. But we've got our document opened. You saw the uninstall was happening. I'm still signed in. Yoni Kirsch is there. And just to prove that Office is not installed here, it shouldn't be. We have no Office locally installed on the machine. So even though it looked like the demo was a little bit clunky here, just to prove the point, and here's where actually Office is being stored. I am storing it on the user profile. So I go into C, right into the user's administrator folder, and Office has actually put itself here on the administrator account. Again, it's not writing to the HK local machine or any of those areas in the disk. It's not having to install itself physically on the computer. It's just caching right here in this location. And then after an hour of non-use, it will clean itself out. It will basically delete itself from the local disk. Next user who logs in can't use Office. All of my data then by default gets stored up into the cloud, so stuff's not staying on the local disk. And I've got a full version of Office with everything there to use with all of the ribbons, all of the features, and it basically launches in about 30 seconds. So even with that uninstall happening at the same time, I was able to get a brand new copy of Word running with no other version of Office installed on the machine.
And look, for me at least, that's really exciting. I spend a lot of time going to different customer sites, sitting down at whatever computer I can get my hands on that has a big screen and going, oh, now I need to start writing up a report. And then, oh, look, I have Word 2003, and that's really
cool. Why don't we just compare our two screens just to show how close the UIs are, because I think this is actually pretty cool.
All right.
So
let's do it.
So look, there's the Yoni.
Now is mine, so we can see I'm moving my document around here.
That's the web app, and just to show mine.
That's running inside.
It's running inside of my VM, but, you know, same type of look and feel, same type of experience. Again, to the layperson who doesn't know this, you know, if they're on their iOS or on their Android or on their Windows 8 device, they'll be able to open the Office web app, and it looks like a great full-featured client. So here we've got, you know, very few things, and if I want to, Yoni's already doing some things here to change the text, and if I save it, I should be able to see that on mine. It's going to refresh. I will go back into my content.
Yep.
There we go. He's a little bit closer to me than you all are. All right.
So look, just for those of you with sharp eyes, I'm working inside the web client from the web app. Jeremy's working inside the full version of Word, and we're working on the same document at the same time, no file locks. The second each one of us hits the save button, the updates streamed real time over to anyone else using the document. Now, I'm not sure what the limit is. It used to be 50 people working in the same document at one time. I'm not quite sure what it is now. But
yeah,
if you've got more than 50 people working in the same report, you've probably got other issues.
And basically what happens there in the back end is Word will kind of section off different areas. You saw when Yoni's area was actually sectioned off for him to edit, so not two people can edit the same exact couple of words at the same time. But if you're in Excel, each person can own a cell inside of Excel.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, obviously you can't have users for every single cell inside of Excel, because that would be how many millions of cells that are probably on a spreadsheet. But again, with 50 users or less, something that you can easily do. And other things that I actually showed with Michael's session earlier, you can combine co-authoring with a link call to actually have a live meeting where you're all using the same note file, for example, at the same time. So pretty cool stuff. And that was Office on Demand and co-authoring. What are we doing?
Jump into that one real quick.
Okay.
No, and if you can just also jump into that spreadsheet. So I've just jumped back into the spreadsheet now. Just from your IE should have it right there in front of you.
Oh, yeah. It should be right there. Which one was it?
The second one down. That's it.
Advertising plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I've just done the same thing. I'm still working out of the Windows 8 IE web app. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to edit this spreadsheet. And what Jeremy was talking about before is, some of you might be interested in having a look at, if I start working on, are you in there as well?
I'm in there.
Okay, you just need to open it in, or just edit it in web app or whatever it is.
Oh.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
The behavior is a little bit different in Excel and Word. I make some changes over here. Jeremy makes some changes over there. The paragraphs get locked out, and when we hit save, it updates everything. Whereas in Excel, it's a bit more real time. So the second Jeremy starts making some changes to the text here, we're going to see it pop up on my screen right here.
So I'm underneath the advertising plan, and I will make my text white so you can see it all. There we go. I'm up in the upper corner on cell B5.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. So I am actually writing, and I can write something else on the next cell. If I want, and update that. And there you go.
You can't see it because
now it is, now it's white again, and Mugu chart.
I'll delete my chart. But we can all see what he's getting at there.
Yes. So we can do whatever we want. We can have both people editing the doc at the same time. So even though this is kind of a 2010 feature, this is something that we extend all the capabilities of as well inside of the new version of Office. Just as a bonus, kind of probably feature number 12 hidden features that you may not know about, co-authoring and the expansion of co-authoring. All right, something else that we can do we've got new developer tools for Office apps. So Office apps, as we mentioned in the session this morning, we've got a whole session on this later this afternoon, by the way. We can take Office now and really combine them with power of the internet or intranet and have them surface up data, interact with data in new ways so that, for example, I can call a Bing map directly from Excel and I can map things like, you know, what's population per city and have a relative size of a pinpoint of exactly who's where. I can do directions, as we saw this morning, from Outlook web app, all these different things that I can do. So I'm calling into web services directly from my Office application experience. So with that, I want to show Yoni's desktop again. He's going to show you a couple of developer tools that we have where we can actually use SharePoint to develop SharePoint and Office apps.
Thanks, Jeremy. So look, if you're interested in the app model, if you've been involved in VBA projects in the past, in VSTO more recently, then I really encourage you to come along to our session on Office for Developers later this afternoon. We're going to go into a lot more detail there about the new app model based on HTML5 and JavaScript in Office 2013. We're going to talk about the Napa web-based development tools. We're going to talk about Visual Studio, and we're going to show a bunch of different sample applications and build some there as well. I did want to give you a bit of a taste just now. So what I've got here, once again, I'm in my Windows 8 IE browser, and this, what you're looking at is the new Napa development tools for SharePoint and Office 2013. So you can see here, if I add a new project, I've got a couple of options. I can write an app for SharePoint. I can write a task pane app for Office, which is similar to VSTO style applications that you might have seen previously. I can write content applications for Excel, which is what I'm going to show you in a second, and also a mail app for Outlook. If you were in the session this morning, you would have seen the Bing and the calendar mail apps. That's what they were, and they were developed using methods similar to this. So I'm going to jump into one I created just a little while ago. And anyone, do we have any developers in the room today? Okay, a couple. So we're all familiar with Visual Studio then. You'll notice that this is quite an interesting little web-based Visual Studio. So we've got some of the features around text formatting and colors and autocomplete and that kind of stuff. And we've got our engine here for creating applications. So to give you a really quick look, we've got our CSS that we can use to control how the app looks and feels. We've got some sample images here. We've got an HTML page, which is actually the content of our app. So, working towards standards, the skills you already have in HTML5 don't go to waste. And then down the bottom, we've got a bit of JavaScript, and you'll see here I've got just two really simple functions. One is going to set some data to a field inside Excel, and the other one's going to fetch the information out of Excel. So unlike other web-based platforms inside the Office apps, we can actually interact with the document that we're working with, and that opens up some really interesting possibilities. So all I've really done in here is changed a few things around, added a few buttons, and set a background. And what I'm going to do is hit run. So real time, this is going from the Napa development tools, uploading it to my SharePoint site. And then it's going to open it. It's going to open a blank Excel document in this case. And we'll be able to see what the interaction is like. Now, if you're interested in this new app model, you come along this afternoon. We'll show you that the apps work in exactly the same way across platforms. So they're going to work in the full Excel, Word, Outlook applications on your desktop exactly the same as they work inside your browser in the web apps, which at least for me is pretty cool.
Is it? It's installing now, so it'll be up in a second. So again, this is something he's used SharePoint to develop apps for Office, and you can also use them to develop SharePoint apps that we'll show. I mean, it's pretty powerful stuff, and you know, obviously you can use other tools to augment that. You can even use these to call in pre-existing apps that you have. So MVC follows those types of things. You can call those in with these types of tools, with Visual Studio in that case, but you can call those apps directly in. So he's going to get a, this is more of a,
too many demos
credential,
on one machine.
Credential there, because he's got some cached creds on another account that we're logging in with. But once we log in with a different account, so go ahead and change your account name. This was all planned, by the way. Just to show the security of authentication and authorization in the Office 365 model. All right. Let's see if you're... And this, the cool thing is we're actually showing it running inside the web app. So you don't have to fire it up in the full client. We can if we want, but because we're developing inside of SharePoint, why not just fire it up through the web app? So go ahead and set some data and some sample data in that cell. Actually, you want to use the get data command in this case. And basically that will add data. Just highlight the cell, it should be okay.
Oh, we got the wrong one there.
You're in the wrong cell. There we go. And that's going to get data, and that can bring that up to the web service. Again, if I'm using a map or something, it's going to be my address, my coordinates, where I'm at. In this case, it's just a simple mock-up of an app that Yoni wrote with a little bit of formatting to show that we can get data directly from the web sheet and use that in the web service, or we can set data. So if you highlight another cell,
I've just done that. Yep.
And hit set data, it's just going to put in the same data that was cached inside that app. So again, very cool stuff. Using SharePoint, we can also use Visual Studio to develop applications inside of Office. So let's show some other somewhat hidden features. So the NAPA thing, it's so new, obviously, that we haven't even named it yet. So NAPA's not the final name, but it's something that we're working on now. So touch and tablet optimization. This is something that we've done a huge amount of work. No, we're good. We're on the right. Okay. No, we'll do that. We'll do that on your... Actually, yeah, you can go ahead and show that. So we've done a lot of tablet and touch optimizations. You've seen a bit of it on Yoni's machine because it is just a tablet. He doesn't even have, if he wants to just use touch, a lot of things that we're doing there to make sure that is, a great experience. You can show it on both of our machines if you want to, but I've got a touch tablet on my Lenovo X220 up here. But just to show kind of what we got in terms of touch mode, let's have a look at your computer. You were on this guy here. Hold on. On B.
Yep.
There we are. All right. So on his touch-only Samsung Series 7 Slate, go for it, Yoni.
Okay. So there's a couple of really, really cool features that I actually am using now on a daily basis, and so I'm quite excited about telling you about them. One of the biggest challenges that I came across when I first got my hands on this really awesome i5 tablet that I have here is that working in Office 2010, my fingers are a little bit bigger than the head of a mouse. And so trying to do things like find the correct style that I'm looking for could be a little bit of a challenge. Now, obviously, if I'm working here with a mouse, these kind of things present no problem whatsoever, but in a touch interface, it becomes a bit challenging. So I wanted to call out the first feature, and what I'm going to do, I'm actually going to turn it off so you can't see it. So those of you who are running the 2013 preview, if you just hit the arrow up here in your quick launch, you can light up this touch mode button. And if everyone just directs your attention to the ribbon for a second, the second I press this button, you'll notice that a few things happen. First of all, the buttons next to all the drop-downs get really big, so I can mash them with my big fingers without any problems at all. The other thing that happens is that the spacing between all the other buttons that you'll notice here gets a lot larger. So you have a lot less chances of hitting the right align button instead of the center button. You're going to fairly accurately get those right every time. So that's the first touch feature that I wanted to call out in 2013. The second one was more specifically related to Windows 8 and Office 2013. And that is that Office 2013, whilst they run as traditional desktop applications rather than Windows 8 UI applications, they are actually manifested as Windows 8 UI applications. And what that essentially means is that we can call into a lot of the cool new functionality in Windows 8 and use that to our advantage. So, for example, if Word 2013 notices that I, rather than using my mouse, if I touch into a Word document, it will straight away pop up the touch keyboard and I can type away using that. If I start typing on my physical keyboard, touch keyboard disappears. Now, you'll notice that even in Windows Explorer, if I'm to do that, I have no touch keyboard. If I want to get the touch keyboard up, I have to come and find it down the bottom here, hit on it, then I can start working with that touch keyboard. But inside Office applications, it's aware of the Windows Touch APIs and capabilities, and so if it detects that we're using touch, it'll behave just as a Windows 8 UI application would.
Yeah, and this is probably the only application in existence, first of all, early on in the Windows 8 release cycle, obviously, that is a desktop app and manifested so it can take advantage of these functionalities. So you have all the different methods of notification, you have the keyboard, all these things that we can then launch directly to the desktop app because it is manifested as a Windows 8 style app, and obviously on a Windows RT device like we saw yesterday in the keynote, this has to be the case because Office is delivered as a desktop app even on that device. So that device, you may not have a keyboard, you might if it's a Surface, but you know, in the same kind of context, you're able to easily go from Word and start typing. When I select an area where I can type, keyboard comes up, notifications from other Office applications can work and really use the rest of the Windows 8 infrastructure. So pretty cool stuff. Again, and not just that, but we're also doing a bunch of stuff in terms of, if you go to Outlook now, and we saw that inline reply capability. One of the core design tenets when you're doing touch is the lack of pop-up windows. What's more frustrating on a touch device when you have a bunch of windows that pop up in the middle of the screen? If I had a bunch of different windows there, let's say I wanted to format stuff, I wanted to go in and, you know, you go to different options inside, format text, all these different things that would have in the past been pop-up windows, now we actually come in from the right-hand side, give you a pane of all the stuff that you would do to edit text, to do shape fill, all those things that we were showing earlier in PowerPoint. Outlook, you know, inline reply, obviously we can scroll up and down the inbox if we want to with our finger.
We've got these really cool new buttons. If you have a look down the right-hand side of the screen there, we've got some buttons, which means that if you're holding a tablet in your hand, they're really easy to get to with your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to reply to Jeremy, I can just hit the reply button there, and then I've got my reply right there inside the window. I don't have another pop-up to manage like Jeremy was saying. I can write the message that I want, I can hit send, and the job's done. And then the last piece around touch was, from an Office point of view, was also there's a lot of effort has gone in to put the common functions that you would use editing documents and working inside spreadsheets right in front of your finger so that you don't have to go searching through the ribbon for them. So, for example, if I select a paragraph of text here and I just tap it, so I'll do that again, I just kind of tap it and we will see that I don't know quite screen resolution to show you that well, but if I click on that one, you can see those additional options pop up right in front of us, and I might decide that I want that to be a heading, and so I can really quickly go and turn that to heading one. Without having to go trancing through the ribbon to find it.
And the same also in Excel. If you look at this thing we call quick analysis, if I highlight a bunch of rows and columns of data, we will, instead of right-clicking, because one of those things, like right-clicking is somewhat difficult to do, if we got a bunch of data there, we'll also surface those types of things. Or if I want to slice and dice the data, we'll also get a quick analysis of what's there, and it will do things like recommend charts for you, two different options in terms of how you can slice and dice the data that you have. So bunch of stuff that we're doing, again, to make it finger-friendly. So go ahead and show that. There we go. There's a quick analysis button. And assuming we had a few more things that the algorithm could detect in terms of what we want to do to that data, then that quick analysis might, like data bars, let's go ahead and show that, or colors, all these types of things. Again, bearing in mind that something like a right-click, even though it's trivial, if I've got a mouse, it's something I can't do very easily with finger and touch, because you've got to hold my finger on the cell, wait for that square. I've got a pretty good timing, as Yoni's showing here. But all these little things, they all accrue to just better touch experience throughout the apps, so making it much easier to navigate those on a touch-only device.
And if you're working on a tablet device or any touch device and you start working with the 2013 preview, you're going to notice this stuff right away.
Yes. So number two, web apps on all hosted Office files. Now, this is pretty awesome. So if I've got an account in Office 365 or SharePoint Online, what I can do is actually share that file to anybody. So one of the things that we've got as a trial, kind of an experiment that we're running with the Seattle Times, is their ability to actually put up sports data. So if I've got a couple of teams with sports data, I want to see wins, losses, I want to see stats around the players. If I'm talking American football, it's about, you know, how many yards rushing various people have and passing and receiving and all this stuff. we can actually surface up an Excel web app, or in Yoni's case, we're going to show a PowerPoint web app, right from a website that anybody can run and basically launch the web app from a SharePoint Online service. So let's go ahead and show that from your blog that we have, talking about our New Zealand Tech Ed experience.
Yeah, so look, I think an example of this, today we're presenting this content to you, and I thought I might want to make the content available to you later on, so I put it up on our blog here. So if you have a look, I've made a quick blog post, and all I've got here is just an image that has a URL that I fetched straight out of SharePoint.
Mm-hmm.
We can show what that user interaction looks like a little later. But if I click on that, you'll see straight away that we're redirected over to the PowerPoint web app. And if anyone sitting in the audience was fast enough to catch that, in fact, if you just go to fasttracktechnology.com.au/blog, you would be able to get to this just the same. You'll notice that we're logged on not with some Office 365 Cloud ID ADFS credential. We're logged on as guest reader. So anyone with no credentials whatsoever could get at this. We've configured it only to allow read-only access in this case, but we could just as easily have said we want anyone to be able to edit that as well. But the takeaway is that I can go through this deck from anywhere on the web, and this is
from
all
any
being
device, even. I can use an iPhone or iPad or anything that's got a browser that supports HTML5 and Java.
Right.
And
Firefox,
I don't know,
Chrome, whatever.
Yeah, and you know, in the old days, what do you have to do? You had to save that PowerPoint local, perhaps, and then it would run either from temporary internet files or from where you saved it to. Now I don't have to do any of that stuff, and I can have it on a device that's pretty stateless in terms of one of those touch-only devices and really see that document, whether it's an Excel spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation or a Word app, all those things I can just post out on my public internet site. Like we saw there, we had a thumbnail to the document, click on it, and anybody can view it from any device. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so anyway. And all still hosted in your SharePoint site, of course. There's no external requirements for servers or anything like that. Quite simply a URL. And anyone interested in seeing how we did that, it's about a 2-second job. Sure?
All right.
No problems. I'll do it straight off the cuff. We'll see what we can come up with. I have no clue which credential is going to log on here, but we'll make something
You can
up.
Always change it. So one of the things that you're using a lot of different Office 365 preview accounts, use Control-Shift-T or in private browsing. Then you can have as many different credentials running as you want. All the cache credentials mean that I can have multiple different
tenants open. So the you want is a maximum of 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. Maximum of 2 is good.
So I'm just going to go into our document library here. There's not going to be anything inside. We're going to create a new document because that's going to be the quickest way to go
about
it. Oh,
there it is. It's right there.
Oh, so it is. All right, so what I can do, in fact, I am going to create a new document because that might, in fact, be the one that was shared out before.
Probably is, yes.
I'm going to create a new document. There it is. It's going to open up in the web app, but I'm not really interested in editing it at this point. So now that we've got our document here, all we do is hit the share button, type in this case, we just want everyone, and we'll say everyone can edit it. This will be fun. No sign in required. Did I type that one?
I don't think you actually selected the everyone,
probably.
I didn't
select everyone, sir.
There you go.
My bad. All right, so that's sitting there now. And if I go back there and I actually look at that sharing. Sorry, my bad. If I just hit the preview there again.
Look at that URL.
Grab that URL. If we go back into my other browser that isn't signed in with that credential. While that's doing that, what I might just do is put that in there.
What's your type into the top one?
Oh, so I did.
So
right, so
like
if anyone has their internet connected, phone, tablet, computer, whatever you like.
You might want to go into a private browser session based on what I see in the upper tab.
Right, so yeah, because, yeah. Fair enough. But if you want to grab that URL there, it's just tinyurl.com/te-osp201. I'll jump into a private one, but I think that's actually going to be logged in with my Windows 8 UI credential. Yeah, there you go. Playing games with demos again.
So that's what happens when you've got all these creds running on a machine. But anybody else that can try that out outside,
then
basically what we'll see is the same experience that we saw in the PowerPoint presentation. Anybody would be able to access it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the number one feature, and I'm not biased because I've written a lot of the specs on this feature set, click to run installation. So I showed a big demo this morning where I did 16 installs of Office in about 3 minutes, way less time than the MSI. What I want to focus on here is actually the administrational capabilities of that, because a lot of people are afraid of, especially here, people just running off into the internet and installing a gigabyte worth of Office stuff, right? You guys have to pay by the megabyte typically, especially if you're in a smaller business. What you need to be able to do is download those Office bits, even though they're cloud, quote-unquote, bits and stream and all that. You can download them into your local infrastructure using IT Pro Tools, essentially. So let's go ahead and go back to this guy, number 5. I might have to reacquire the image. Yep. Okay.
Oh, I didn't
catch it. There we are. Now let's swap over. So basically, I have the ability now within, even though it's, again, streaming, even though it's click to run, it's not the MSI, it's still, at the end of the day, a setup.exe and a bootstrapper. So what I'm getting is I can go to the Microsoft Download Center, and I can download the Office deployment tool for Office 2013, I think it's officially called right now. Basically, what that enables me to do is download and install Office. So I'm not going to show you all the installs happening. I'm going to show you something in a minute of how I can use a couple services combined. But I'll show you just what this tool does. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a command window and just show you what you would do. Because again, remember, this is IT Pro stuff here. We're going to usually call this via scripting and usually have these things work with automation, something that we're going to do inside of a deployment task sequence, something we're going to do with System Center Configuration Manager, Intune, whatever. And basically you have these functions here. I've got the download switch that I can use, and basically what download does is it gives me the ability to download to whatever path I want to download those files to. By default, it will download the newest stuff, but I can also put in a version number and download the version I want. Then I can use configure, and configure is basically what I'll call as part of, say, a System Center or a Microsoft Deployment Toolkit or whatever deployment. And then finally, if I have AppV version 5, anybody got AppV out there? One person.
That guy over there.
Two people.
Are you deploying Office for
Office will be pre-sequenced for you using this command, because anybody who's tried AppV with Office knows that it takes several days, sometimes several months, to get all of that working the way they want it to. Now we're actually giving it to you on a silver platter pre-sequenced for you. So again, these are the tools that we would call, and basically just to show you some of the ways that we can customize here, I have a download.xml, and we'll go ahead and edit that and just show you what those look like. So here, basically what will happen if I run that download switch against the command line, that will download Office from our Office 365 portal. We can then also determine what languages we want. In this case, we have Japanese. That was a little bit of a zoom it gone wrong, and English US, and the products Visio as well as the Office 365 Pro Plus package. And when I download that, I won't show it because we don't have the best bandwidth here, and that's really the point of all this. If I don't have the best bandwidth, I can download it onto my premises and deploy it from my own network share, so I don't have to worry about using internet connections in that case. What I'm going to get then is my Office source data, my Office source files for install. Now this is, if you're used to seeing what Office installation source looks like, a completely different world. So here are the Office installation source files. You remember back in the 2010, way back in the 2010 days, we had MSI and all the different Access, Word, Excel, all of those products were enumerated in the folders. If I had multiple languages and I had heaps and heaps of folders in there that I would deploy from, now basically we have Office, all of that in one file. So again, going in, zooming in on this one, this is all of your Office source here. Alright, and these are your MUI packs essentially here. So when I do an installation, I can again script it, I can add whatever language I want. By default, if we have the languages all there, the MUI packs will align themselves to what language you have installed in Windows, all the stuff that you kind of expect there. Now, the other things I can do, a lot of people then will say, well, that's great, but it's this cloud app, and it's going to be updated via the public cloud service, and I don't like that. I want to be able to test. That you can do as well. So we can do a bunch of things with updates. Let me just go back up. So, and we'll cover this in a lot more depth tomorrow, but basically in my configuration, my install file, I'll show that real quick, we have the ability to turn off automatic updates. Why would you want to do that? Because in some cases we're not going to, or in a lot of cases, we're not going to want these update files to be applied automatically from the internet. We're going to want to test those things. We're going to make sure that Microsoft's not breaking stuff, not breaking our add-ins or customizations. That we can do. We can do things like, you know, automate the install so it's all unattended and all those different features that you would expect, again, from something that you can deploy out through software distribution. Here's our source path that we had, where we're storing the files. And that's going to be where we install Office from, in our case, on a file share. So part of the other thing that we can do, and I'll show a quick video of this, actually, because I have that all queued up, is I can, if I want to, call another cloud service to enable the entire thing end-to-end. Here, in this case, we're going to show Windows Intune. So with Windows Intune, it's one of those things where I can upload about 2 gigs worth of stuff, but we can use the robust streaming that we have directly from the internet and have Intune just send some small instructions down. It will give me the version I want, the language, all those things. Here I only have to upload about 0.5 megabyte into Intune. So I have Intune pre-configured with my Office 365 Pro Plus package, which is, again, just that setup.exe and one XML file in our case. So I have requirements. It's going to look for Windows 7. So one thing that you have to bear in mind with the new Office is it requires Windows 7 or Windows 8 as a base OS. We cannot install on XP or Windows Vista because we don't have the graphics capabilities in those operating systems. So our command line arguments, as you would imagine, with what we saw before, the configure command to install along with our XML to give it the values that we install for, normal zero return code, and then we can publish the app out into to our end user population. We'll go ahead and save that and publish this job so that users can install Office themselves from Intune directly. Now, again, this is one of those cool things where I'm using the Intune cloud service to send some instructions down and call the Office 365 cloud service so that all of the major heavy lifting is being done by Office and not by Intune in this case. You could do this with MDT. You could do this with System Center Configuration Manager. Anything that will run that setup, I can point it if I want to the cloud, to Office 365 file source if I want to install from there, or I can do it completely on-premises with a file share or a distribution point. Anybody a software distribution guy that's doing software management infrastructure? A couple of people. So I guess in terms of consuming this, anybody else in the room who's not doing software deployment, here you can go to your software catalog. This could be an Intune or in System Center Software Center from the start menu. Either way, here I'm going to select the Intune package for Office 365 that I just built. And the cool thing here is for Intune and for System Center, normally they would cache all of Office into their local file cache, so CCM cache for SCCM and also in Windows Intune in the program files folder within Intune for their file cache. But here we only have to cache 462 kilobytes, less than 0.5 meg. So the install can start immediately and start streaming from the cloud service. And again, like I mentioned this morning, you'll have Office up and running in 2 minutes or less. I don't have to wait for the whole download of 700 megs and then wait to run it for 20 minutes to install, which might take an hour or more to get it fully running on the system. In this case, I went straight to the software center, started the streaming, and basically it just had to download that small instruction set and then pass all the heavy lifting back off to the Office CDN. And within a couple of minutes, I'm up and running on all the computers that I'm connected to with Intune. So pretty cool stuff.
Pretty cool indeed. Now, I'm conscious that we're just about to run over time.
Yes.
So, was our number one?
That was our number one. Yes.
How about you, Jeremy? I hope everyone took something away from the session today. We're here, so feel free to come and ask us questions. You should also be able to find us around the booth or around the conference. And we hope you got something out of it and have a great conference.
Thank you. Okay.